Okay, it's another episode of How to Be Tom Shalhoub. We're here with Jim Florentine. Jim, thanks for coming out. Oh, look, there's a picture of you behind you on the wall there.
Yeah, that's my podcast, so I always have that. That's the only green screen I have that I know, that, so I just use that.
Everybody's Awful Except You. That's the podcast, but it's also your book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book is basically based off my podcast, which is just, you know, people send in stuff that they know I would hate, stuff on social media.
Yeah, you know. And so you're constantly, do you do that live so people can interact with it when you're doing it?
No, I don't want to deal with the nonsense that goes with that.
How do you do it though? Because sometimes, I mean, I've seen you, you're like, oh, this is what everybody's saying. What, it's just, you're looking at their emails or something?
Yeah, they send in, fans that listen to the podcast send in like words or stuff that they know I would hate, fake stories, you know those, all those stories online about my four-year-old just read War and Peace in
yeah.
2 hours,
yeah,
like stuff like that, the bragging parents, you know, all that. And they only do it because they want to let everyone know that the kid's only smart because of them.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting. It's like, you would think that with the way that, you know, technology and everything, people, things are so verifiable now, you would think there'd be fewer fake stories like that, but there's more than ever, right?
More than ever, absolutely, because everyone's just looking, vying for attention because they see their other friends getting it with a post of whatever they did. So they go, nah, I got to come up with something because I need people to give me a bunch of likes and put some smiley faces and one with a tongue out, one winking. I need that too. It's really, it's like high school stuff.
Yeah. Do you ask people, this is something that, you know, I know you're supposed to, when you put your podcast out, you tell people like, oh, please like and subscribe. I mean, it's hard to do that, isn't it? To say
it is.
Like,
it is.
Ask for people to like you in that way. But
it is. I do Patreon. So I do like 3 extra podcasts a week.
Yeah.
You know, for behind a paywall, and I do one for free. So I just tell them, hey, if you want more of this nonsense, sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just going to do it or not, basically, right?
Yeah. And if they want more of it during the week, they do. And I don't force it on them. I go, look, it's out there for whoever wants it.
Do you think it's a generational thing? Because I can remember, you know, when, for instance, I mean, just in our business, right? I remember being feeling bad for Dane Cook. Like, I felt embarrassed for Dane Cook because he was begging his fans to do things for him and to buy his CD. And we just didn't do that. It was just not in the ethics of stand-up at the time to be begging for attention in that way. And when I say I felt bad for him, it was, he was on the precipice of stardom. He wasn't yet a star. But I remember thinking, geez, this young guy, he's just too hungry. He's too... you know, it didn't seem masculine to me, this idea of like begging the fans. But now that's de rigueur. I mean, everybody in the business is begging their fans to do things for them. So now, was I wrong about Dane Cook, or was I wrong to feel that way?
No, he definitely was. You know, look, the best way to do it is go, hey, here's my comedy special. Here's my comedy album. Here's a link to buy it. That'd be great if you buy it. It just came out today. You know, whatever. Like that. Just do it like that. There's a lot more humble way you could do it instead of... I hate when it reeks of desperation and begging. I hate those posts.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
I see a lot of comics do it too. Yeah, no, Dane was
definitely
guilty of it.
It's almost everybody now. It's the business model. You can't do without it. And then you also have to go on and you have to say, look, they're being mean to me. Like people being, like saying... people want to take advantage. They say, hey, you're my fans, but look at all these people that are being mean to me. And then the fans come in. I mean, everyone from Taylor Swift to Donald Trump engages in that kind of activity now.
Yeah. No, look, if you're going to put stuff out there, you gotta know that it might go to a place where they're not your fans. I just did a whole video on the Travis Kelce Taylor Swift thing last week, and it got caught fire, so it's... All the Taylor Swift fans are coming after me. It's hilarious, you know. So you just don't know. But you have to be prepared for, like, if I put this out there, it could. And just deal with it. I don't even read them though, so I don't even care. But they're just, I know they're coming after me. You know,
yeah.
Saying, you know, because I don't buy into Taylor Swift. So,
well, I mean, she is talented, right? Isn't she? This is something that I almost feel like the backlash has gone over with her because, like, my daughter really likes her, and so I hear her music all the time. I mean, it's kind of undeniable that she's good at what she does, right? She writes these songs. It gets people all whipped up into a girl frenzy and everything.
Yeah, no, she is. She's like, you know, in a modern day, like when we were growing up, Madonna was yeah. it back then. She could do no wrong. Everything she did, she was all over the place. But, you know, my whole thing was Taylor Swift, like, you know, she had this movie just come out last week. And, you know, she's dating the biggest star, like in the NFL. And she needs to get that audience because she doesn't have the NFL guys watching. They know one song. I know one Taylor Swift song. So all of a sudden, like, hey, this is more publicity for my movie. If it's just like when the stars date, when a movie's coming out, all of a sudden yeah. they get together for publicity. I'm like, this thing is, you know, totally for publicity. That's a whole untapped audience that Taylor Swift want. That's how, you know, you just made over $1 billion on your tour, the biggest tour ever. Do you really need more? But, you know, she's now she's just addicted to being in the spotlight. She can't help it. She's flying everywhere. To yeah. go see Travis Kelce, flying to L.A. to hang out with her friends. I mean, for someone that's a liberal and, you know, is into climate change, she's leaving a big carbon footprint, you know.
Oh, big time.
You know, it's just weird. She wants me to drive an electric car, you know, to save the environment. But I do a lot of driving. I got to charge it every 6 hours. So as I'm charging my car at a shady gas station at 2:30 in the morning off of the turnpike in Connecticut, she's flying over my head because she wants to go hang out with her friends. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. I'm surprised. You have an electric car.
No, I don't, but she wants me to have one.
Right. Okay. I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Would you get one? I mean, it's,
I don't know. I'm not into the whole idea of charging it all the time. And,
yeah,
you know, if they came down in price, I would, but, you know, it takes you like 9 years to break even on yeah. how much more it costs for a regular car. So
yeah the it is funny though, I would not get an electric car because I don't like the idea of the I'd be staring at that battery all the time. But it is funny because we have a gas tank, so the gas tank does go down as well, and I guess I just don't have that that same anxiety when I see the gas going down. I guess because we know that there's a gas station around every corner, right?
And you could call AAA and they could bring you gas. I don't think they could bring you a charge.
Yeah.
For your Tesla. Yeah. Maybe they can, but I just see people like, I don't feel like waiting in line to, you know, driving to a gig to, you know, charge my car when I'm on a schedule to get there. And I got to wait like 3 or 4 cars because there's only 3 chargers.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I see it at the mobile station when I'm going up the not the Henry Hudson, but the sawmill, whatever. Right. The charging, the Teslas are there parked at the mobile station. And I'm thinking, what are the Tesla owners doing? Are they just sitting in their car, like, you know, listening to podcasts or something? They have to stay there for like a half an hour, right?
Yeah, I think it's it takes 25 minutes to charge at 80%.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. So, no, I see it driving home from gigs, like these really shady gas stations.
Yeah.
And I'm not even afraid to go out to go into the store or whatever, even pump my gas. And you got to, you know, some guy just sitting in his Tesla, just waiting to get carjacked as yeah. because he's charging it. He needs to charge it.
Yeah. Okay. So are you a car guy? And I want to ask you, if you fix your car, what's the extent to your car repair know-how? I mean, can you get around an engine?
No.
No.
No, just the basics I could do. I was never a big car guy, but I don't. And as far as cars, I drive used Honda Accords. I've been driving them my whole life. I buy a used one with like 40,000 miles. I pay cash for it. I drive it for 4 years and I trade it in and I get another used one.
Yeah,
I never have
it's
a
dependable.
Car payment. It's dependable. I get it at 40,000. I trade it in about 110,000 miles. And yeah. then I just get another one every 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, can you change? Well, I guess nobody changes their oil anymore. I mean,
to change my oil back in the day. I used to have to change.
Yeah.
I would change it just to save money. But I don't, you know, now they're really high tech with the computer, so I don't even know. I mean, I could put the antifreeze in, the washer fluid and all that stuff, but.
Yeah, just the basics. Okay. I want to ask some more lifestyle things because do you do laundry? I mean, do you load clothes into a washing machine?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, well, look, I'm a single dad, so I got a 13-year-old son, so it's just me and him in my house, so I got to do everything. I do his laundry, help him with his homework, I cook him lunch, dinner, breakfast, I got to get all that stuff done, yeah, so I'm full on.
I mean, so you do the whole thing. So let's talk about that, the domestic engineer duties. You do the laundry. Do you iron clothes?
No, because I have a dryer though. You got that wrinkle thing in there, so you just kind of throw it in for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and it gets some wrinkles out. I will iron clothes on the road if I'm wearing a shirt at the show and it's wrinkled, but I don't feel we're two boys, so we don't care if there's a couple wrinkles in our shirts.
Yeah. So okay, he's 13. So yeah. Has he ever done a load of laundry?
No.
Okay, how about the dishes? I mean, do you have a division of labor? Does he do any dishes? No dishes.
He'll take out the garbage and he'll vacuum.
Okay.
He does that. But no, I do the dishes too. And by the way, I don't use a dishwasher. Dishwashers are overrated. There's no reason for them. I just rinse the stuff off. I put it in a thing. I dry it. I put it back. I have a favorite cup that I use every morning. I don't want it sitting in the dishwasher for 7 days because I need to fill it before I run it.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, I want to drink out of my favorite cup, but I can't.
Yeah. So your hand wash. Okay. Now let's talk about how you do that. Do you fill up the sink in this kind of like pool of dirty water or whatever, or do you just run the water and wash them and, you know, make it all happen at once?
Just run the water and wash them one at a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was getting my kitchen redone and my brother, I said, look, man, I'm not getting the dishwasher. That's stupid. They're useless. I don't need them. There's just me and my son here. There's not that many dishes. I use the same ones over and over again. He goes, listen, just get it put in. He goes, at some point, some female is going to move in, a girlfriend, or maybe you get a new wife, and they're going to want a dishwasher. So just get it, even though you don't have to use it, because it's going to come in handy at some point.
But you didn't get it.
No, I do have it.
Oh, you do have it. Okay.
Yeah, I do have it. I think I used it twice. I remember last Thanksgiving, my whole family came over. We used my house for Thanksgiving. And I remember like 2 days later, I go, did someone steal some of my silverware, like my spatula? I'm like, and I didn't want to accuse my family. I'm like, that stuff is missing. 9 months later, I opened the dishwasher and they were in there. My sisters did it when they were cleaning. I had no, that was the last place I would check.
Well, that's it. Also, Thanksgiving, you actually have to put out all of the settings. I bet you don't do that. You know, you like you and your son probably just grab like one dish. You put everything in it. You eat it. You rinse it. It's done, right?
Yeah. We don't set tables or any of that stuff.
Yeah. How about the grocery shop? You have to go to the store? You go to the store?
I do all the grocery shopping. I do all the landscaping. I do all the yard work. Yeah, I do all of it, everything.
Wow. No lawn guy coming to do your thing. Yeah.
I used to landscape before I did comedy, so I know how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I could do it. It takes me like 35 minutes to cut my lawn, and then I plant stuff and put mulch down and stone and do all of the trimmings and stuff like that. I used to do that stuff, so I don't mind. It just gets my mind off of things just to go outside and get some air and, you know, just do mindless stuff.
Yeah, so can you do home stuff? Like do you say you had to do some drywalling, you wanted to put drywall into the garage, would you do that?
I've done it before, but that's not my thing. I can't fix too many things. I don't have the patience to put things together, and no, I'll usually get somebody to do that stuff.
Yeah. And plumbing, do you ever
no.
You know, no, you won't do it, you'll call a plumber.
Well, you know, during a pandemic, you know, you can go to YouTube and they could show you how to do anything. So I fixed my faucet during a pandemic by going to YouTube and just following directions. So, but no, I'll call a plumber too. I don't deal with that stuff. I'll look online to see how I can unclog something. I'll try some natural ways and stuff like that before I call a plumber, because that's always at least $600 just from the answer a call. So
do you have a day that you go to the grocery store, or you just kind of go when you need stuff, or like what's the routine?
Yeah, I just go when I need stuff, usually like later in the week, like you know, maybe on Sunday or something, or a Friday.
Yeah.
It's just and I just write the stuff down that I need earlier in the week as I run out of stuff, and I put it down in my notes on my phone. So
yep.
I have it, and you know, I'm in there pushing a carriage, buying stuff, and you know, all of that.
You know what? Who is it? Your brother that said about the, you know, I thought it was interesting, the phraseology that was used. He said, at some point, some woman's going to move in. Like, he didn't say, like, at some point, you're going to fall in love.
No. No, he didn't.
At some point, some female's going to move in.
Yeah, and you're going to have the dishwasher. You're going to have to, they're going to have to tear apart your kitchen to put a dishwasher in.
Yes.
So, he didn't say that. That's exactly how he said it. Some woman's going to eventually move in.
So if you were to say this woman, right, came in and moved in, would she immediately, do you think you would expect her to become the domestic engineer of the home? Would she start doing the cooking and the dishes and things like that?
No, I still do. I'll do the dishes. I got no problem with it. I don't like any dishes in the sink. So
yeah,
I don't need her to stop that. If she can cook, that'd be great. I mean, I could do some simple cooking.
Laundry.
I can do that too.
When periods in your life, when you had a woman in your home, in your domestic situation, whether it was married or unmarried, did you still do the laundry?
You know, I remember one girlfriend I lived with, I did the laundry. And that's when we would get in big fights. I remember one time she cried because, like, her panties were still, like, wet and they weren't completely dry. And I put one bra in and I wasn't supposed to or something like that. And she was crying. You realize the last two times that you cried when we were fighting is over the laundry. I go, so we're just doing our laundry separate. I'll do mine and you do yours. And there'll be no more issues. She's like, no, I don't want that. I go, no, that's what we're doing because this is ridiculous. You're crying over, like, you know, a wet sock.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
So it was separate. It was the guy doing the guy's laundry and the...
That's what I did it after that. I said, then we're going to do... This is how we diffuse the situation.
Yeah.
You do yours, I'll do mine. So I don't know what kind of fabric your thing is made out of. I said, stop buying cheap stuff and it won't shrink.
I had my wife's sister, the husband was doing his laundry. And my wife was surprised that he did. And she asked, and her sister said, no, we do separate, you know, laundry. They were married, but he did his own laundry. She did her laundry. My wife does all the laundry in the house. And so that's just the way, you know, and I could do it. I mean, I could do a load of laundry. It's not something like, a man doesn't do the laundry. Like, I could definitely do it. I like to do the ironing, like when I get... I get my shirts done, so they're ironed. But if I have to iron a shirt, I'll open it up. I'll iron a shirt, you know. Or when I'm in a hotel, if I'm on the road this weekend, I was in Texas, you know, I pull the iron out. I do the ironing before the show, you know, the whole thing. But it's just not something that I do around here. You know, we have our things that we do. I don't do the. I mean, I used to do the. I would cut the lawn and kind of do those things. I liked having that. Since we have a house, I like doing those things. But then this guy came around, you know, this Hispanic guy who does all the lawns around here, and he says, hey, can I do your lawn? And we said, okay. And then he just started doing it. So now everybody around here, they have people do their lawn. So I joined in the fun, you know?
Yeah, most of my neighbors have it too, but I just like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I got the lawnmower. I know how to do all of that stuff. And, you know, I live in almost like the woods. So the leaves are huge. I mean, I have to do like, probably about 30 hours of raking leaves in the fall.
You do. And how much yard do you have?
Not that much yard, but I got a lot of trees and I have to do it in shifts. Like I've been doing a little, I probably put like 3-4 hours in so far, and it's not even peak leaf season where they're falling off the trees yet.
Yeah. So you got a 13-year-old. How much time are you home? I mean, do you ever go away on the road for extended, like, you know, a week or two?
No.
No,
I don't do that. No,
you're just like, you're kind of basically, you drive to your gigs.
No, or fly. So I leave Thursday and I'm back. The latest I'm back is Monday morning.
Yeah.
You know, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, usually I do. So
yeah.
I never did the 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Once in a while, I have to be in LA for a TV show. I'd be out there for 10 days or something, but I don't do that road stuff. Right. I always come back home.
Yeah. But he can, the 13-year-old, he's good. He can be good Thursday through the weekend.
Yeah, because he's with his mom. I'm divorced, so I got him earlier in the week. She has him later in the week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So as soon as, like, Thursday comes, she has him, and I get him back, like, on Monday.
Yeah.
So it works out perfect. And I have him, like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and all that stuff, so.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to, like, workout routines. I would think that you're, what do you do for, like, do you have a set of weights in your garage? Like, what's your routine on the health situation?
Yeah, I got weights in my basement. I bought a lot during the pandemic too, you know, all that stuff. So, cause all the gyms were closed. And then I also, go to a gym. There's like a Crunch Fitness in my area. So no, I work out probably like 4 to 5 times a week.
Four to five times a week.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's it. I mean, that's, you probably work out the whole time you're, unless you're out of town doing a gig or something, right?
Even if I, like the, this past weekend, I was in Maine and New Hampshire. There was a gym in the hotel, like a nice gym, a really big one too. So I worked, I'll try to work out on the road if I can, but I'd say at least 4 to 5 times a week.
And workout, what? Do you do the weights? You get on the bench, do squats? Is it like basic, like weight guy?
Yeah, weights. Yeah, lift weights. Not too many squats because of the knees, and you got to be careful with that stuff as you get older too. But yeah, always weights, and then I'll do cardio too, whether it's, you know, one of the machines or something like that, or if there's a park I'll go to, and I'll do like a fast walk or for like 45 minutes or something. You know, that's what I always work on my comedy set. I'll listen to my set as I'm walking.
Yeah.
It seems like I'm more creative when I'm actually moving, which is weird. Yeah.
And no dog? You got a dog?
No, I had a dog. Don't have one anymore. So yeah.
That's what my time out. When I get out in the park, it's basically the dog. I got a golden retriever. Okay, what else? My other things. Okay, yeah. I was surprised that Jameson was – he didn't really play. I figured you guys were in a band – you know, because you're so into metal, I figured at some point you'd be in. Jameson's never played in a band. Have you ever played in a band?
I can't play an instrument. I don't have an ear for music. I tried when I was growing up. All my friends were in bands. They were the guitar player, the singer.
Yeah.
I was a lefty, so nobody could teach me. Like, can you play righty? I couldn't. And then also, I just didn't have an ear for music. I went for singing lessons. The lady's like, you don't have it. She told me the first time. She said, maybe I can. She was like, I'd steal your money. So I just don't, you know, but I always enjoyed music. I always wanted to be in a band. And I was like, well, then I'll be a comedian because I want to be up on stage somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And when did you start? What was your first, you know, stand-up? What age or you know, when did you do it?
I started at 25. I started
25,
pretty late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know what I was DJing. I was DJing on a radio station, you know. I had my own DJ business in rock clubs and weddings. So I was doing, you know, I was kind of in it. And then when the comedy, I was like, I got to get up on stage, because on the radio they would be like, oh, don't say that. I wasn't trying to be outrageous, but I was always getting in trouble. And then they wanted me to play like stupid stuff, like Phil Collins. I'm like, I'm not playing this garbage. Studio, that stinks.
But wait a minute, as a DJ, everybody wants to dance. I bet, were you always trying to force your kind of heavy metal on the listener?
Yeah, I hate, well, yeah, that was another thing at the weddings. You know, they come up, you know, hey, could you play, what was that one? The Hot, Hot, Hot by Buster Poindexter.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that song stinks. Like, I would argue with them. Like, yeah, but I want to play it. I'm like, no, that's horrible. I'm not playing that.
Okay, so I can't remember the story, but I want to do it. We were on Gutfeld, okay? Or was it the Saturday Night Show? You and I did Gutfeld together, right?
Yeah, I did it when you were a host, too.
That's it. So when I was the host, this came up. It was something, and you were like, oh, and then this happened and this happened. But then, I started doing prank phone calls, and that's what got me, crank yankers. Do you remember when you told that story? And I wanted to explore that on this a podcast. Like, when did you start doing prank phone calls?
You know, I was just I don't know, I was probably like 8-9 years into my career, you know, as a comic. You know, I was working at the comic strip or whatever, like, so I would just have comedy shows at night and I have nothing to do during the day. I'd just be home. I was just barely making enough money, so I would just wait for telemarketers to call and I would pick up the phone and try to waste their time, see how long I could keep them on the phone.
That's it. So the first thing was the telemarketers. That was before
crank anchors.
Yeah. Okay. Because you and Don have, like, you made CDs of this kind of stuff, didn't you?
We have 8 of them.
And
we're
doing
it.
So the telemarketers thing, you just started doing it, and I assume this is back when you had, you know, you had an answering machine, right? And the telemarketers would call, but you'd pick up the phone, and then you'd what, record? Or did you have special equipment to record it?
Yeah, no, I went to Radio Shack and got a little recorder hooked up to the phone with a cassette.
Yeah.
So it just plugged right into the phone. So it was easy. But I was just doing it to amuse myself.
Yeah.
And Don Jameson was the one who told me, because I would tell him what I did. He goes, hey, put me on 3-way. I want to hear this. This sounds funny. And I put him on. He goes, dude, this is gold. You should put this out.
Yeah.
Because he was a big prank phone call fan. I really wasn't. I did it as a kid or whatever. So I started recording them, and I just put a CD out myself. I went to a local place in Jersey, got like a, you know, 500 of them made. I figure I'll sell them after my shows, get my name out there. But when I put it out, I dropped off the Howard Stern show. And I remember the producer, Gary Delabate, goes, all right, man, if it's funny, we'll play it.
Yeah.
And the next day he started playing it. He's like, Howard Stern, that was when he had like 20 million listeners.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, my God, who is this guy? This is hilarious. He was playing and playing, and the thing just blew up. And like a month later, they had me in the studio. And then, you know, like Crank Anchors, Jimmy Kimmel, and Adam Carolla, was their show. They heard me on the Stern show. They
okay, so
fans.
What year was this? What year was
2001.
2001. That's later than I thought.
Yeah.
That's funny. If you would have said, when were you doing special ed, I would have said like 1995.
No, it was June of 2002 is when Crank Anchors premiered on Comedy Central.
Yeah. When did you, say you started when you were 25, when did you start doing stand-up, like, at the clubs?
At 25 is when I started.
Okay, 25, but now what year is that? Is that early 90s?
Yeah, like 93. Yeah. No, it's like 91.
91, just when I started. That's when I got to New York. I was working down at Universal Studios in Florida, and me and this guy, Asif Manvi, moved to New York at the same time. My first open mic was at Cold Waters, and that was a, what was her name there? Who used to do Hamburger Harry's? Janice or something?
The little woman?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
And so Jim Gaffigan was there. It was Cold Waters. But it was, I'm going to think of her name, Gladys.
Gladys, yeah. Yep.
So Gladys was running Cold Waters at the time. This was pre-Hamburger Harry's. I showed up at Cold Waters because I saw the listing in backstage. Jim Gaffigan was there. So I went up and I did my 5 minutes. Jim did his 5 minutes. And then we exchanged phone numbers that very night. And so that was in 91. And so I had the sense you were like a 90s guy as well. You did what? What were your clubs? Like Dangerfields, The Strip?
The Comic Strip was my main club. Yeah.
Yeah. That took me a while. I didn't have... Lucian was, you know, the famous guy who ran the Strip. He didn't own the club, but he was the booker, and he was the ever-present person there, and you had to pass muster with Lucian, and he would, you know, watch you and review you. He never gave me spots. You know, I went in there, no, I'm not going to pass you. You know, you're a skinny white guy. I've got a lot of those guys, you know, that whole routine. But then it was years later, and I was, it was probably the late 90s, just whatever it was, I won over Lucian and started playing The Strip. And that's really when, you know, things got going. I was playing Caroline's because Caroline liked me because I was clean. She always liked having those clean guys open, you know, the show, like, as an MC. You know, that's, you know, how things got going. But nothing really got going for me until after about 2000, 2001. And you're saying that's kind of almost the situation with you as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing comedy, 8 years at that point or whatever. Just, you know, headlining like B and C rooms.
Yeah.
You know, I never did the Funny Bones and Improvs. I was never doing the A rooms. I would do like the Rascals as the MC or feature,
yeah,
headlining these little gigs, firehouses and stuff. So I was ready. You know, I was ready to headline. I just didn't. And then when Howard Stern started playing that stuff and had me in, I started selling out shows.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden my manager goes, hey, man, Jimmy Kimmel, Adam Carolla from The Man Show, I'm going to start this new prank phone call show. And they want you on there. They like your calls. They hear you on Howard Stern. So, yeah, like the timing of it, there's never been a time in TV history where there was a prank phone call show.
Yeah.
You know, and just Stern starts playing it like within 4 months. I'm the only unknown comic to be on that show. Sarah Silverman was on, Dave Chappelle, Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
Kimmel, Carolla. And I was like the only Tracy Morgan. I'm the only unknown comic because they love the characters that I did.
Yeah. And so that's interesting because I didn't even know that was Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. They were doing well on The Man Show. And what, they got like a development deal with Comedy Central, or they just, you know, wanted to do another show and they came up with this idea?
They were guaranteed 6 episodes because The Man Show was so popular. They, mm-hmm, you know, they ruled Comedy Central at the time. So Comedy Central greenlit 6 episodes right off the bat without even seeing a pilot or anything.
Yeah.
And then it just took off from there.
It's true. You know what? I forgot. You know, it's all coming back to me now. Sarah Silverman and all these other characters on there, they were all already well known. But when I look back, and I bet a lot of people think this, I think of it as your show. Like, I think of it as Jim Florentine And so if you had told me that the whole thing was your idea, I would have believed you. But it was.
Yeah, well, you know, and I had two characters. You know, I did Special Ed.
Yeah.
And then I also did a character, Bobby Fletcher, was just basically my voice.
Yeah.
Just doing. So I was constantly on. And Special Ed was the most popular character.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy how popular a character got. So.
But crazy just, popular. But I'm guessing the actual money that you got from Comedy Central probably wasn't that great, right? They just hired you. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I think it was like $5,000 to do like a 4-hour session of calls. I probably make like 15, 20 grand during a season. And we did like 4 or 5 seasons. Yeah, it wasn't much. But it was favored nation.
That's
so
not
everybody
bad,
got paid. Everybody got paid the same amount. But the great thing is they would fly us to Vegas because Nevada was a one-party state where only as long as one party knows you're being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of states you can't record somebody without them knowing. So we'd fly to Vegas. They put us up in the Bellagio for like a week or maybe like 5 days, first class. Yeah. To make prank phone calls. It was the best.
Yeah. So then that was, I think if I have this story correct, then you were kind of the favorite on Crank Anchors. Special Ed was really the way everybody remembers that show, I think, you know. But Comedy Central then, did you do a special for them or a half hour special or an hour special?
Never did.
Oh, you never did?
They'd always just, you know. Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And then they would just never do it. So,
yeah. But then there was a pilot. What was the pilot? And I think they didn't. My understanding is that you did a pilot and it was too edgy for them or something, right? It was too politically
incorrect.
Well,
that was a hidden camera series.
Yeah.
Me and Don Jamieson did a hidden camera series called Meet the Creeps.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You shot it for them, but it was with Comedy Central's on their dime. They shot it.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me how that came about, and then they didn't do it, but then you went on and did it on your own. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, I just got a bunch of comics, Jim Norton, Artie Lang, me, Jameson, a bunch of guys together, and just went around with a hidden camera. I put a DVD out, started promoting it, and then Comedy Central liked it, and they put us on their broadband channel, like their internet channel.
Yeah.
They go, we're going to put it here. If it gets popular here, we'll put you on the regular network.
Yeah.
So we did like 2 seasons. We just have to do like 1 bit a week. We'd give them a hidden camera bit. Nobody was watching it, you know. But anyway, but they liked it and they gave us money for a pilot. And it would look like it was going to get picked up. And we shot an episode, you know, pilot for them. And they go, nah, it's too mean. But meanwhile, that's why they hired us. Like, you know, because it was like, you know, our stuff wasn't like... The bits would end, whatever the bit was, it would just fade to black. There was no laughter. There was no, hey, I was just joking. Oh, yeah, there's a camera. We didn't do that. It fade to black. You go, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
I like doing it like that. I don't need to see the reveal
of
people laughing. I'm like, oh, you got me, you know, so.
Well, I mean.
So they thought, I think, and then the Practical Jokers came around and everyone loved it because it was more likable.
Yeah.
You know,
although
even though
they didn't
do
get
edgy
that,
stuff.
Right? Comedy Central didn't get that. I feel like Comedy Central, their history for the past 20 years, basically, has been missing out on everything. Like how the Practical Jokers should have been on Comedy Central. They weren't. They were like on Spike or something like that, right?
True TV. Yeah, I think it would start off at Spike. Yeah, but no, Comedy Central dropped the ball on so many comics. They had no idea what to do. They were just cheap and unorganized, that channel, that network. And to this day, like nobody watches Comedy Central.
I don't know what it is.
It's not on anybody's radar. I know.
I don't know what their brand is because, you know, everybody talks about the brand, you know, what's their identity. Back in the day, they were a politically incorrect network. They would have roasts. They would have Special Ed. They had The Man Show. And so if you were, you know, a dude who wanted to, I mean, it was mostly, I think it was a guy demographic, but obviously girls watch the network too. But it was very politically incorrect. But now it's almost the opposite of that. Like, it's very politically correct. Is there anybody still doing, is Tosh, does he still do stuff on Comedy Central?
No.
No.
And, you know, Crank Anchors came back in like 2018 or 19.
Yeah.
Came back after like 12 years back on the air, but they wouldn't let me do Special Ed. They said it was too, no, the times have changed and we can't put them on. So I still do the other character, but nobody watches it. Like, I never get any feedback from these episodes. And we've done like 3 seasons since.
Yeah.
But they won't put Special Ed on it. And everybody's like, there's no Special Ed. I'm not watching. Like, people went crazy. Like, how can you not bring back that character?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could. With Meet the Creeps, you did the thing for Comedy Central. They didn't go for it. But then you and Don went ahead and shot them on your own and made straight to DVD. Did you not?
Yeah, we did straight to DVD, and we just, you know, and had it out there. And they play them now on all those little, like, Tubi TV and a bunch of other places.
Oh, they do?
So they're out there. We did three, like, hour and a half DVDs of all hidden camera stuff.
Yeah. What has happened with stand? I don't really know what the stand-up business is like anymore. I mean, now with the success of Gutfeld, I'm now, you know, selling out rooms in a way that I didn't before. But I'm doing a lot of the 4 o'clock shows and 6 o'clock shows because that's the, you know, 9 o'clock is the new midnight for this. You know, for this audience of Gutfeld, and they like coming out early and then going to bed early. Do you still do late night shows and everything?
I did a show up in Maine on Friday night. It was 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, just one show at 9. Then I did one Saturday. It was 7:30. I'm like, next. No, I like the earlier shows. I always said, yes, I'll do them at 4 in the afternoon. Give me a 4 and a 6 o'clock show, and then I'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly the older crowd, the Gutfeld crowd, the ones who are coming out, especially because of the Joe Biden thing, you know, it's that Gutfeld Fox audience now is like 90% of the audience, and they want to get out of there early, especially in the city. If they go into Philly, they don't even want to go into Philly. Like, they complain that I'm playing, you know, when I was in Dallas last week, I was in Fort Worth and then in Houston, and the people say, what are you doing in Houston? They don't want to go into Houston. They want to be like, they want someone to come out to see them, you know? But even so, if they're going to go into Houston or Fort Worth, they want to be home by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or something, you know? So that's why the early show thing is doing great for me. But have you noticed a Gutfeld? I mean, you do Gutfeld fairly often. Is there a Gutfeld contingent? Do people come out to your shows and say, hey, I watch you on Gutfeld? Or, like, you know, did they find you through Gutfeld?
Yeah, a lot did. Yeah, they definitely. I'm getting a lot of people coming out. You know, it depends what state. Like, I did a casino in West Virginia. I got a lot of people coming out.
Yeah.
That are Gutfeld fans. Florida does really well. You know, I did Philly like 2 weeks ago. I didn't draw in Philly because, like, people are like, no, we're not driving into Philly. Just like you said, they wouldn't come into actual Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So, no, I see it's starting to build.
Yeah.
You know, with the Gutfeld fans. And because they seek out guys like, wow, that guy's different. He doesn't care. He's going on Fox and he's funny. And they will find you. Even if you don't plug the date, they'll look you up and find you, which is great.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's a real right wing audience on Fox. And they're obviously into politics. But you don't need to do politics. I don't do politics in my act. I don't say anything about politics. But just the fact that you are on Gutfeld, it gives them, you know, it's like, oh, I want to go see that guy. But you don't need to do anything. You don't need to talk about Joe Biden or Trump or anything.
No, I don't talk about any politics. And I got in my act either. And I got a really diverse audience. I got, like, guys in Iron Maiden shirts sitting in the front row.
Yeah.
And then I got Gutfeld people. So I'm not going to divide the room by talking about it. I never talked about politics anyway. I don't feel like fighting with people.
Yeah.
You know, over it, people in the audience that don't agree on it, they hear a certain word. So I just talk about what's going on in my life. So I never bring that stuff up.
I almost feel now, though, that for people who don't like to talk about politics, that's almost like a right-wing trait. Like, if you say, I don't want to talk politics, people are like, oh, yeah, you right-wing nut. You know what I mean? Like, unless you, they demand that you like it be accountable or whatever the hell they want to, you know, say. It's like, unless you are an activist now, they consider you to be right wing.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Those people don't come, you know, they're not coming to my show, so I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, that it, I see other comics do it, especially when Trump was in office. There'd be like 9 comics on the show doing Trump jokes.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, man, are you going to do your Trump jokes? It was hilarious. Well, I got one. Can you not do it this show? And I'm like, why don't you just write different material? It's all the same punchline.
Exactly.
It's a Polish joke. Okay, what did he do at the end? That's what it was.
Now, I want to kind of, you know, wrap this up with a thing that I don't know if you care to. You can only you only reveal as much as you want to reveal, but you seem to be pretty, you know, you open about the way, you know. Well, I don't even know why I have to preface this. I like to talk about the business, about how I put it all together, and people seem to be interested in the old days, in the 90s, I barely made any money from stand-up. I mean, I would get, if I got out of town at the Comedy Cabaret, maybe I'd make $300. So I was making most of my money doing advertising, you know, commercials, voiceovers, and that kind of thing. Occasionally, I might get a TV job, but I didn't make much of a living doing TV, film, nothing. You know, it was basically commercials. And then eventually, I started making more of my money doing stand-up. Then I'm touring with Gaffigan. I made most of my money off of that Gaffigan train, you know. And then that lasted for several years. And then I kind of started riding the Gutfeld train and you know, make now most of my money on Fox. But then I supplement my income with doing live shows. So how do you put it all together? You really have, if you look, you've got the podcast, you've got the live shows, you got the merch. You know, if you go to your site, jimflorentine.com, merch comes up. So you're selling DVDs, you know, you got the DVDs, you got the t-shirts, you got the mugs. So you've got a real, like, your fan base is pretty loyal. Like, definitely your fans are fans, right? And they'll go the extra mile, they'll buy the merch. But kind of break it down for me. Like, how do you put it all together now? You know, you're a single dad, you only like to travel on the weekends, right? Do you make most of your money with the actual stand-up gigs, or is it Patreon now? Is it the merch?
It's probably the stand-up gigs. You know, I do well with the stand-up still. I could still sell some tickets. So I do that. But, you know, yeah, then I got the podcast. So I got some advertisers on my podcast. Then I do the Patreon. I got a bunch of people signed up there.
So you got advertisers. So advertisers, do they contact you, or do you work with some, like, advertising, you know, people who plug in ads? And
yeah, I got work, this woman that gets ads for a bunch of different podcasts. I'll get, you know, like 3 a month or something like that for my free podcast. And then my Patreon, you know, that's behind a paywall, so I make money doing that. And then you know, I got, you know, residuals coming in from all my comedy albums. It's a nice chunk of change that comes in every month, you know, from Spotify, from SiriusXM, Sound Exchange. Like, you know, I think I got 7 comedy specials out and 8 telemarketer prank call albums. So I think I got 15 albums out.
Yeah. And so all of those are on all the services.
Yep. And a lot of the prank calls are clean, so they get played everywhere. There's rarely any cursing in them, so kids can listen to them and kids love them. People rediscover it. So I make money on that just from that stuff getting played on all these different Spotify, YouTube, SiriusXM.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff, internet channels.
Yep.
And then, you know, plus I got a lot of investments with my family. My brothers are in the real estate.
So okay.
They used a lot of my, you know, a lot of money that I made over the years doing that metal show or Crank Anchors. I had always invested because I live basically, you know, I don't spend a lot of money.
Yeah. So when you had those big paydays, you would like, okay, I'm socking that away. And
absolutely.
Then, yeah. So that's good. So you got a portfolio. You got some real estate. You got some stocks. Is that right?
Yeah, I got some stocks. I got a lot of real estate on pieces of different things. So I got money constantly coming in. You know, and then I got a finance guy to invest for me and stuff like that. So, you know, just different streams of money coming in constantly.
You know, that's interesting.
That's the way you have to do it. So I don't have to rely on, I could say no to gigs.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, I think in showbiz, you have a lot of guys, they're just kicking around. They're barely making a living. When they get a Comedy Central show or if they shoot a Netflix special, they get this influx of cash and they just upgrade their lifestyle. And whatever it is, the cars, the house, whatever. But like you said, you're basically a blue-collar guy. That's the way you think, right? You kind of kept your lifestyle the same. And when you got those bumps, you'd sock it away, right?
Yeah. Because you never know. Like in this business, you never know when it's going to fall out. Like all of a sudden, you're going to be broke. You always think, I'm going to be back in that crummy apartment with 2 other roommates splitting rent.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just barely getting by. So you always have that in the back of your mind. Like, I can't have that happen. So I got to be conservative with my money. And I don't buy flashy stuff. I never did. I always tell my son, I go, if I could afford 6 cars in my driveway, I could have 6. I go, no one's going to like me better. I'm not going to have more friends. So that stuff never mattered to me.
Is he solid? The 13-year-old? Is he got, you know, he's good. He's got the, you've imparted that kind of.
I go, just wear jeans and a t-shirt. That's all you gotta wear. You don't have to wear the brand new Nikes, the brand new Kyries. No one's gonna, your friends are gonna like you no matter what. So you're not gonna get more friends because you got the brand new sneakers.
Does he want to do comedy? Is he a funny guy?
He's done it before, but he hasn't. He stopped kind of now. So
yeah,
I don't know why. You know, he's in the hanging out with his friends. He plays basketball and stuff. So I'm not going to force it on him. Look, I know. Like, do I want that life for him to be on a, you know, in some little town in a Holiday Inn off a highway for 3 days,
yeah,
sitting in a hotel just waiting to do gigs? You know, why you're missing out on your friends having parties and all that stuff, because that's the life of a comic.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, it's not the people entering it now. It's a different world. You got guys that are just they go straight into podcasting or, you know, TikTok or whatever, and they're building their fan base. And then it's funny, like, they'll be, you know, what we had to do to headline a club, the number of layers we had to go through. Now you got people, they got a following, then they'll get, you know, whoever to represent them, and they'll just book them into a club, and they'll just they just go direct to the consumer. Now it's almost like they avoided all those layers that we had to bust through.
Yeah, it's true, but you also need the experience under your belt. These guys that, you know, flash in a pan, a YouTube or a TikToker, you know, he can go through the clubs once and sell them out, but if he doesn't have anything,
they're terrible.
They're not going to come back. They won't come back. So,
but I don't think they have it. I mean, do you think there is any I just don't think stand-up is – I don't think they're any good, Jim. I don't think they're I don't think the young crowd – and, you know, I don't want to be like an old, like, you know, wherever. But they don't have the skills that we had, that we developed over a decade. I mean, it's all about identity now. Like, they go on TV, and there's not that many TV spots anymore, but – I don't know when the last time I saw a young comic go on TV and talk about anything except their identity, their racial identity, whether they're gay, whether it's all about identity. They just point out what they are, and then they make a remark, and it's like, yay, and then people clap. But there isn't the work that we had to do. I feel like we were much more athletes of our time. We had to learn the hard way.
Right, we were the football players that do two-a-days in the practices,
yeah.
You know, and now they barely even practice. They don't hit each other. There's, you know, they're only allowed to, the football players in training camp will only hit each other like once a week. They used to do four-hour practices in pads. You know, that was us.
Yeah.
But you know what, like, in the long run, but the people see it, like, when you see a seasoned veteran go on stage and handle a room,
yeah,
maybe that's not in the good place. The guys before really aren't doing it. And they're not a good crowd, and that guy could turn it around. That's when you know this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You get that, you know, and that helps from us doing all that, you know, the experience behind it. So we can handle any room.
Yeah. All right, Jim, this was great. I won't even say it because I'll tell you after we sign off. We record these, and then a week later I post them. So
right,
I'll post
perfect.
It in a week. So JimFlorentine.com. They should go there. They got the podcast, Everybody is Awful. So they can get that on Apple, all the other things. But basically go to JimFlorentine.com. They can make all the contacts, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right. Jim, thanks. I'll probably see you around Gutfeld soon.
Yeah. No, I'm doing it Gutfeld tomorrow, actually. So.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
I might do it. I'm not on the panel, but they might call me to do Joe Biden. And if they do, I just... Do what I have to do.
Tom, I told you day one when you started doing Biden, I said, if Saturday Night Live had some balls and put you on doing Biden, you'd be selling out arenas.
Yeah.
If they had the balls to make fun of Biden. I told you that when you first started doing it.
Yeah.
You'd be a superstar.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But they don't have the balls to do it.
Yeah.
They won't.
No, they'd never do it. And it's, you know, they even had it. They had Jim Carrey do it, and he's
My God, I know. He put sunglasses, like Biden's cool. He had him in sunglasses, like Men in Black. That was the most pathetic sketch I've ever seen in my life. That guy, there's not one ounce of coolness in Joe Biden.
Yeah. But that's what I say. The, you know, what was it? You know, people say to all the time, they'll see me. And they'll say, oh, I watch you on, you should be on Saturday Night Live. And I say, well, what do I need that show for? I got Gutfeld. I mean, Gutfeld has millions of viewers. So
I know.
That's my, you know, that's my show. Of course, that's what I wanted to be on SNL when I was entering the business. But now that I've kind of, you know, I've done the whole thing and now I got this Fox News crowd, it's like, that's good enough
for
me.
No, it's perfect. It's exactly. Because you go on there, now you're exposing yourself to the whole world and they'll just try to take you down. They'll try to tear you down.
Yeah.
Because that's not part of the Hollywood playbook to make fun of him.
Yeah.
And especially if you do it on a show like that, that's not Fox News. They'll come after you hard.
Yeah. All right. So maybe I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe you'll see me on as Joe. Have a good time.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for doing it. It's great.
All right.
Bye-bye.